I'm now joined by Wes Gray, CEO of Alpha Architect, who currently offers 8 ETFs with close to $450 million invested, including a new ETF last year, the Freedom 100 Emerging Markets ETF, ticker symbol FRDM, Freedom, which is up for a bunch of ETF.com awards, by the way. Best new ETF of 2019, best new ESG ETF. The underlying index itself is up for Index of the Year, among other awards. But what's noteworthy is this was the first ETF under Alpha Architect's white labeling service. They now have 3 ETFs here altogether. And this simply means if someone has a great ETF idea, they can bring it to Alpha Architect. And Alpha Architect has everything in place to take that ETF from idea to reality, bring that ETF to market. And again, this is in addition to Alpha Architect's own proprietary ETFs, which currently focus on value and momentum. Wes is on the line with me from just outside Philadelphia. Wes, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, likewise, Nate. Honored to be here again, and I look forward to discussion.
Yeah, so we're going to bounce around on several different topics, but I do want to start with a white labeling business because there's really not a whole lot of good information out there on this, and I think investors might find it interesting hearing how some ETFs ultimately come to market. First, I'm just curious, what made you decide to get involved in the white labeling business?
Sure. Well, I mean, basically to solve the problem you just mentioned there. So Perth, who started this Freedom 100 Index, had approached us, and we just never thought about it, right? We'd always been internal, focused on doing our own stuff, but we'd already blown our brains out building all this technology and infrastructure. And when she approached us and said, hey, I want to work with you guys, I said, nah, we don't do that. And then she started explaining this industry, which is essentially a monopoly of like two or three players, and we're like, hey, we can compete in this business and probably do it cheaper, you know, more affordably and with more transparency, and we've already got the huge sunk cost of building all this infrastructure. Why not let entrepreneurs take advantage of that? So that's kind of how we ended up here, in a long story short.
Yeah, so explain some of the basics here. Like, how exactly do you help someone with a great ETF idea? How does that process work?
Sure. So one of the biggest kind of pain points that a lot of entrepreneurs have when they come to market with an ETF idea is dealing with all the compliance and regulatory components, right? So it's essentially like having an IPO for a company when you launch an ETF. So there's tons of brain damage involved in just the preparation, all the legal documents, all the filings with SEC. So we're going to help people get to market, which sounds easy, but like anything, it's actually harder than you think. And then once you've gotten to market and you essentially have your IPO for your fund, then we help people manage the day-to-day, like portfolio management, compliance, regulatory, all these sort of things.
Now, do you do anything on the marketing and distribution side, or does the person behind the ETF handle all of that?
Yes. So in our offering, we don't do that. We're of the belief that in this marketplace, in this day and age, it's got to be a passion project. So whoever's idea it is should be the salesperson, because they're going to be the person that has the most passion for it, where I may like the idea, but the reality is I'm probably not the right person to sell it. And so we encourage people, like, listen, if you're willing to be the person that can sell this, thought lead this, you know, convince people this is a reasonable idea, we will deliver a very efficient, lean, high-quality, you know, back-office servicing operation, essentially. But you, the salesperson or idea person, is going to have to, you have to be the passion behind the project.
Does the ETF rule change anything here in terms of the white labeling business? Just that it's now easier to bring new products to market. Does that matter at all to somebody who has an ETF idea?
I mean, you talked about a lot on Twitter, and I think you got it right. But a lot of people are like, oh, you know, in the mainstream media just have no clue. They're like, oh, this is going to make the cost of entrepreneurship and the barriers to entry to launch an ETF come way down. And they're really talking about the fact that you don't need to get, like, the exemptive relief. But that's like 10 grand. And the reality is that's nothing in the grand scheme of launching an ETF, where all the tough part is, you know, the operations, the compliance, the trading, the, you know, the selling, the distribution. Like, that's where the barriers to entry are. It's not the, you know, saving 10 grand on the exemptive relief. That almost doesn't even matter. So, I mean, it's definitely nice at the margin, But in the end, as you know, and being in our business, like ETF and asset manager business in general is just insanely competitive, and it's just difficult. And no amount of regulatory actions is going to, unfortunately, minimize that anytime soon.
Okay, so I think that raises an interesting question. If somebody does have a unique ETF idea, what do you think that overall decision-making process should be as to whether they decide to launch it on their own or use somebody like you? I mean, does it come down to cost or capability to handle the back office? I mean, what do you think are the key decision-making points there?
There's trade-offs in everything. And I take the philosophy of crawl, walk, run, which is old military concept to kind of de-risk everything. You don't want to just start hitting the ground running. And so theoretically, if someone's like, hey, I want to set up an ETF business, they could build all the infrastructure pipes that we've already built and burn, millions of dollars on fire. And that might be an appropriate path if they have the capital and they're willing to do that. But for most people, we recommend the crawl, walk, run philosophy, where it's like, hey, down the road, maybe you want to do that, but let's start small and just try to launch one successful idea. And the win-win is you can leverage our infrastructure because we can get you to market for, let's say the all-in is like 250 grand, right? Like, that's a lot better than 1 to 2 million, and you don't have to do much. So it's just a trade-off. Like, you can either outsource it, get the market fast, efficiently, or you can try to build out the whole business, and obviously you're going to have more control, but you're also going to have a lot more cost. And I think it just depends on the situation and what you're trying to achieve, basically.
What about your decision-making process for whether an ETF is a good fit? And, I think about yourself and Alpha Architect as a whole. A lot of people know who you are. You're out there. And obviously, you're not just going to take anybody that shows up and knocks on your door with an ETF idea. So what are you looking for?
Yeah. So, it's like anything. Like, the number one thing, obviously, is honor and integrity. So people that, I can bring them to my house, we can host them, and, I feel like they're, good tribal members, so people we can trust, basically. So once you check that box, okay, great, let's move on. The next thing we look for, it's pretty straightforward. Basically, prove to us that you can pay your bills for at least 2 to 3 years, and prove to us that you can bring at least $5 million in investment capital day one. And that seems like a high barrier, but in the end, it's not going to be a win-win if we launch the ETF and you can't pay the bills, which means we're going to lose, and you can't put any assets in it because that means we're wasting everyone's time.
Right.
So, so as long as you got good honor, integrity, we trust you, and then you could pay your bills and you could bring some capital to the problem where maybe you got like a 2-3 year runway, we're willing to, jump in the pool with you and give it a whirl. Now, nothing's a guarantee, but at least you got a chance of potential success.
I know how well you understand the financial markets, and my view of you is that you have really strong conviction around your investment beliefs. Do you have to believe in a product from an investment standpoint, or are you more concerned about product viability? And to your point, some of the intangibles, the trust factor, and the fact that the person with the idea is fully committed.
Yeah, so we are not here on this in that business. It's basically like the equivalent of like the shovel selling business. We will not necessarily say, hey, I'm going to jump up and down for this particular product. I'm going to put all my personal capital in it like we do with our own products. And that's not to say that it's good or bad. It's just that we understand that there's different segments, different needs, and different utility functions out there. And, hey, if you want to bring a good product to market that someone will enjoy and pay for, and it's a good functioning idea, we will help you, the entrepreneur, make that happen. And that's why I said at the beginning, we don't help sell these things, but we will make sure that you don't go to jail and the thing operates efficiently. It's on you, the entrepreneur, to, convince people this was a good idea. So we don't stand behind them from an investment perspective, per se, as much as we would, obviously, on our own products where, we put our money into the things personally. And we generally like the strategies, but the level of conviction is different, obviously, for white labeling versus our own stuff in general.
And by the way, I should have mentioned that in addition to Freedom, which again is up for a bunch of ETF.com awards, The other two ETFs are the Merlin AI Bull Rider Bear Fighter ETF, ticker WIZ, W-I-Z, and the Merlin AI Tactical Growth and Income ETF, ticker SNUG, S-N-U-G. I find the white labeling business fascinating. Wes, I do want to switch gears and talk a little bit about ESG. So this is a topic we covered earlier in the show. And I saw the tweet you had last week that I guess I interpreted is poking some fun at ESG. So you asked whether ESG is the new quote-unquote science of investing, right? And you pointed out how 2 years ago the hot topic or best science involved machine learning. 4 years ago it was factor investing. Do you feel like ESG is just the flavor of the month?
So in general, what I would say is yes. Like any time the product people are out there banging the wall and trying to sell you something, you just always want to be skeptical, especially if this flavor tends to change every few years. So that's not to say that there's not like some kernel of truth that, you know, ESG and these sort of concepts is something you should, you know, shake your head at or whatever. It's just that from the product standpoint, you want to be very skeptical that, you know, maybe this quote-unquote ESG fund you're buying, wait a second, is that really just the S&P 500 that I pay 10 times as much for? And I think what happens is when people look under the hood and try to understand what they're actually buying, a lot of times, not just ESG, but other things as well, they're in the end, they're just buying marketing pitch. They're not buying substance. And so that's kind of the context behind that tweet. And it certainly feels like ESG is leaning more towards the marketing component versus the value add component, at least how I currently see it. You know, obviously other people can agree to disagree. That's just my opinion on it as it currently stands.
Okay, so to be fair, I do have to ask you, the Freedom 100 Emerging Markets ETF Freedom, that is up for best new ESG ETF. So, you know, what's different here?
Well, so nothing's different. It's just, and like I said, I have nothing against ESG. And I just happen to really personally like the ESG of Freedom. I was a Marine Corps officer. Like, I love America. You know, I'm one of these maniacs that hangs a flag out every day. So for me personally, I love Freedom. I love promoting anything that stands for that. And so, yeah, this is ESG. I don't force anyone to buy this. I don't sell it. But I think it's a cool idea. And I like Perth, and I want to support her cause. So I stand behind that. Now, is it the same sort of stance I would take where I said, hey, it's like value investing where there's, you know, 200 years of data and there's been 1,000 professors that have identified that, yes, this works over the long haul. No, it's a total different, lens of viewing. And that's fine. There's, you know, something for everyone in the marketplace. And, you know, to the extent that I personally would want to do ESG, this is the kind of ESG that I would want to do. But that doesn't mean it's for everyone. And like I said, we are not pitching this as, like, something that's going to, like, you know, destroy the world with great performance and, you know, be the next panacea. We're just saying, hey, this is an offering and an opportunity that if you believe in freedom and want to convey that view via an investment, this is an option.
Wes, going back to your point on sort of the efficacy of ESG factors and perhaps their ability to outperform, you know, again, obviously you're a strong believer in value and momentum. And as you mentioned, those two factors have withstood tremendous academic rigor over a long, long period of time. Do you think ESG can ever get to that point? Or do you view it as completely different than those other factors and other proven factors that are in the marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, it could. I mean, the issue on all this stuff is you need a lot of data, a lot of time to kind of flesh these things out. And then the other thing you understand is usually in the marketplace, you get paid for pain. So if it's easy for people to say, oh, I would love to own Exxon because, you know, it feels good to have, you know, own an energy producer, but that's not the case. Like, I think it's a lot easier for people from, like, a behavioral standpoint. It's very easy to own ESG. And anytime something is easy in the financial marketplace, you should expect, on average, to earn marginally lower returns. And there's nothing wrong with that. So that's my opinion on ESG is people that pitch it as a way to earn extra return, that's probably not true to the extent that everyone wants to buy ESG and it feels good and it's easy to do. Because you, like I said, easy things to do usually don't get paid extra on the long-term scale of investing. So it's just a trade-off.
That's an excellent point, and actually one I haven't heard before. And I would add to that that it's been even easier to own ESG in a 10-year bull market, right?
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that's the other thing. And that's kind of at the top there. Like, when you really do a look-through on ESG funds, what are they? They're basically tech funds. They all, you know, whether that's actually ESG or not, but they're basically funds that own mega cap tech. Well, guess what did really well the last 10 years? Mega cap tech.
Exactly.
You know, if it was underperforming by whatever, like value, like you don't see a lot of, you know, value out there these days. Like, you know, I doubt ESG would be as popular right now. But we'll see. If it starts underperforming and people, you know, still want to throw money at it, then, you know, maybe I'm wrong. But, my guess is there'll be a new flavor of the day, and I don't know what that is yet, but that's the cycle of the investment business.
Yeah, there's always a new flavor of the day.
Yeah. Anything that they could do to earn more than like what Vanguard's charging, someone's going to sell it out there, right? So it's just, and 99% of the time, what people are selling is just a bunch of bunk. So you've got to be very careful about, you know, if I'm going to do extra spend, let's make sure I'm actually getting some value for this and not, you know, some great marketing pitch or whatever.
Wes, a couple of minutes left before I let you go. You mentioned doing a look through on ESG funds. On a related note, I wanted to ask you about your ETF portfolio construction tools that you offer at alphaarchitect.com. Sure. So investors can look through their portfolios. They can see factor tilt, active share, right? Those types of things. The question I have for you is, you see all sorts of ETF portfolios, especially from advisors. What are some of the common mistakes or issues you see? And maybe mistake is too strong of a word, but what are some things that you find lurking in portfolios that advisors might not have noticed?
So the number one thing we see, and we usually generally deal with advisors who are fiduciaries and generally interested in their clients' benefits. So, and so what I'm about to mention, to your point, it's not like anything against them. It's just sometimes if you don't have the tools and the capabilities, it's hard to even know if you're screwing something up, even if you're trying your best. And so typically what will happen when we see portfolios proposed by advisors and they ask us for 2 cents on it is when you actually – I always give a hypothetical example that's not true but just to make the point. So you go get the portfolio, and it has S&P 500, has Russell 1000, Russell 1000 value, Russell 1000 growth. And then it'll have small cap value, small cap growth, and what happens – is when you actually look through all these funds and the associated weights with the underlying holdings, and you pretend like, hey, let's just get rid of all the ETF wrappers and remap that portfolio, what ends up happening 9 times out of 10 is you go to the advisor and you're like, hey, man, just so you know, you just replicated the Russell 1000 but with way more expenses. You could have just bought one ticker as opposed to 10. So that's typically the genre of the problem we usually see is people are buying a bunch of different tickers, not realizing that they're just essentially replicating the Vanguard fund again, which, you know, is probably not what they're meaning to do, I guess.
But to your point, I mean, does that come down to a lack of access to proper tools? I mean, is that ultimately what you find is the issue?
I think it is, because a lot of times there's maybe some weird incentive for the advisor to do that because they want to look like they're doing something. So that's a pretty rare circumstance. I think most of the time they just don't understand that because, to your point, they don't have the technology and capability to do that. And that's fine. That's why we've been building these tools, because this is what we do. We sit around and program and, you know, geek out on data, and then, you know, we get input from advisors who have a problem. And then we look at it as our job, hey, we got to help fix this problem, help people, you know, make better decisions. So we're trying to lead, lead the front here to try to help people make better decisions and be more informed. But just like anything, education is a slow go in this world.
Well, and I guess not to set you up for a shameless plug, but can anybody access those tools at alphaarchitect.com, or how will that work as you build out those different?
So, yeah. So, So right now, just because of compliance and all kinds of other issues, it's like the tools are available to like our clients and kind of close holds and people who will sign off that they're a financial professional. Down the road, we definitely have plans to kind of open that up, but as you know, like we're in like the most regulated business on the planet Earth, so we have to, even though we're trying to help out the end consumer, we just got to make sure we do this in like a nice regulatory compliant way, so you know we don't go to jail, you know, indirectly through trying to help people, which is crazy, but that's just kind of the nature of our how the world works in our business. So we will try to get this out to as many people as possible in a compliant way that is, you know, friendly to regulators and all these other things, for sure.
Well, Wes, always enjoy our conversations. I really love everything you and your team are building at Alpha Architect. Congratulations on all the success so far, and I certainly look forward to chatting again soon. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, sir, and same to you with the radio and podcast stuff you guys are putting out. It's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That was Wes Gray, CEO of Alpha Architect.